Welcome to the National Bicycle Greenway's Mountain Mover podcast series. Here you will get up close and personal with people who are taking giant steps for the betterment of cyclists and for the planet itself.
We traveled to Southern California to talk to the people who make what my long-distance bike rides across America are now proving to me is indeed grade A rocket fuel. In all the training I've been doing that will soon get me and the 1891 Eagle high wheel across America, I have found what I know will soon become the cyclist's best friend. One of my ride's main sponsors, Sun Food. So to tell us about this amazing company, we have Brian Bowers and Chris Ox. How you guys doing today?
How you doing, Martin? How's it going, Martin?
All right. Okay, who wants to tell me what Sun Food is?
Hey, Martin, this is Brian, and I'd love to give you an overview. So Sun Food is a raw food, superfood company. We started off selling books back in 1995, and we were just trying to get the message out about the power of raw foods, healing people's lives, helping them recover from injuries, losing weight, the benefits on the environment of eating lower on the food chain, getting plant-based foods. And people kept calling us, asking us where they could get some of the foods that the books were talking about. Where can they get truly raw olives and, raw, non-deodorized coconut oil? So we started carrying them, and eventually the food part of the business surpassed the books, and now we're a food company.
Okay. Well, that sounds pretty interesting. I hadn't known that that was how you started out as a book company. Being a publisher, that's really interesting to me. I've been a Cycle America book publisher in print in the 90s, and now I'm just all about bicycles on the web. So let's do it this way. Tell my listeners who are wondering what makes Sun Food, the foods that your books are saying people should eat, as energy foods and superfoods, what makes them any different from all the stuff that's out there? I mean, will this stuff lose its effectiveness over time like most of the other superfoods that are out there?
Sure. Well, kind of got a two-part question. First, like I said, we've been around since 1995. It's a long time, and we've got a lot of experience in the field of superfoods. But I think what makes our company different is quality. I mean, we always go the extra step to make sure we have truly raw, high-quality products. And, now there's this big trend where you go online and there are so many raw superfood businesses out there. Everyone wants to get in the raw superfood business. Mm-hmm. They see it as a growing
right.
market.
Uh-huh.
And so what happens is a lot of people set up shop and they just start calling domestic food importers and trying to order so-called raw foods.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that is that when you get into mainstream food distribution, a word like raw doesn't mean the same thing for a bulk food importer that it does for a raw foodist.
Mm-hmm.
For example, cashews. You can call up and get raw cashews all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is cashews are typically heat extracted. The cashew kernel is pretty tough to get open, so most people use steam and high heat
mm-hmm.
to burst it open. And so what a raw importer, the word raw means to a person bringing in cashews, it just hasn't been roasted and salted, let's say, after it's been heat extracted. So it's not truly a raw nut.
Mm-hmm.
The other problem you run into is, throughout the years, we've had a lot of people try to tell us what they think we want to hear about a food. And we've been really skeptical, and we've been able to weed those people out and get exactly what we're looking for. So that's what I think sets us apart. We have really close relationships with the people who actually grow the food. We like to go to the source and see the process for our Sun Food products all the way through the process, verify it, so we know what it is, we know what we're selling, and if something doesn't pass that test, it doesn't get to our customers. When you look at whole raw plant foods, you're really looking at what nature intended as a food source, as an energy source for human beings. I think where you can lose effectiveness over time, you're going to see when you start isolating different elements of foods, like in the case of whey protein or even soy protein. When you've got people working out, you talk to some of the top muscle building athletes, and they'll tell you that sometimes they have to take a break from whey protein or soy protein because it's too much for the body. Whereas when you're taking in nutrients from plant foods that are close to their original state, you know, heirloom wild varieties. It's really, you know, our bodies were, you know, designed, you know, by nature to use that as a food source, and it's really hard to find something that you can burn out on over time that's in its natural state.
Hmm. So in other words, the rush I get, as it were, from the cacao or the maca, that's going to stay with me. It's going to be, I'm not going to reach kind of a saturation point where after a few months' time my own experience has not been true. I'm just wondering, am I going to hit a wall? Is it going to become less effective for me?
Well, you know, Cortez wrote a lot about cacao, and so it is the people that were with him when they discovered it in what's now Mexico, what was the Aztec kingdom. Mm-hmm. And they wrote about how they could, you know, have a cacao drink in the morning and walk all day without food. They used it for years and years and years. They never wrote that, you know what, we can't use it anymore. It's not working. It's hurting us. So I think with whole foods, I've never heard of a case where somebody burned out and couldn't use something unless they were adding something else to it. Or, like I talked about before, if you're really isolating one element of a food, then you can get into trouble where you got to take a break from something. That's uh-huh. also true with herbs. Uh-huh. There are a lot of herbs that you can't do day after day for a long period of time. Uh-huh. Most herbalists will tell you, you know, try taking an herb for a while, then take a break from it. But we're uh-huh. talking about food.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in terms of food, you've added a whole new lexicon to the English language, as if you will, words like goji berries, maca, cacao. Give me some names, throw some names at me, the kinds of foods and where they come from.
Sure. Well, the funny thing is that it's new on the Western vocabulary, but these are really old words. In fact, mm-hmm. the word cacao is said to be almost 15,000 years old. It could be one of the oldest words for foods that's still in use today. Goji is a very common word to hear in the Far East, in, you know, China and Tibet. Maca, they've been calling maca, maca Peru for a century. In Peru, they've been calling maca. They've been calling it maca for centuries. So our foods come from all over the world. Chile, I mentioned Peru, Ecuador, China, Indonesia, Tahiti, but primarily from Peru. Most of our favorite items are coming from Peru. The Aztecs really, the Incans really left a lot of interesting foods for us to find. And for instance, maca. Mm-hmm. It was traded by between the Spanish and the Incas at the same exchange rate as gold at mm-hmm. one point. It's really mm-hmm. valued by these ancient peoples. And maca became it was almost endangered. It was almost lost. In fact, it's been called one of the lost crops of the Incas because in the 1980s, some researchers who were looking at foods of these Incans, they found that only about 70 acres were under cultivation during the 80s, mm-hmm. and that's a really small amount for a food crop to be under cultivation in the entire world. So right. since then it's risen now that people have, you know, recognized it for its role in increasing fertility and energy and stamina and all the properties that we love it for. It's on the rise, definitely. There's more under cultivation now. We're not in danger of losing it anymore, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So if it's all the way coming from Peru, and a lot of your foods sound like they're South American foods, how do you know they're pure and that they meet your specs?
Sure. Well, not everything we have comes from all over the world. We have some, you know, close to home domestic products as well. We have carob pods from right here near San Diego, California, where we're based. We carry a few California olives. But yes, we also have a lot of foods coming from all over the place. So we've become, went from being a book company to now being, you know, experts in food importing. And food importing, when you're doing it with raw foods, is especially tricky because, most foods are processed at high temperatures for, you know, what's deemed a safety. We see that high food or high temperature processing as degrading the nutritive qualities of the foods. So we have to do this really special dance with raw foods where we want to say, okay, we want to keep the nutrients intact, but we have to be reasonable and make sure the food is stable. So the first thing we do, like I said before, is we visit the source. That's one way to make sure that they're up to, that the foods are up to our raw specifications. What temperatures are they being dried at? Making sure there are no chemicals in the process that we don't agree with. The second way is through good old science. Certificates of analysis, we call them C of A's. We get certificates of analysis on every shipment that comes in. So when we're getting a load of cacao from Ecuador, we've got microbiological counts to make sure it's completely clean from any microbes, E. coli, salmonella. It's got to be clean before it comes in. And we also get certificates on pesticide residues because all of our products are organic or wild crafted. So we've got to make sure that they don't have any pesticide residues. And we search, we don't cut any corners. These lab tests are expensive, and you're not required to do them on every shipment. So we go the extra mile and make sure we get these tests for everything that comes in so we know it's clean and we know it's free of pesticides. And that's the only way we're comfortable doing what we do is to verify. Trust but verify.
Jesus. God, I didn't know there was this degree of intensity. Oh, okay, so now, why do we need to bother with your foods? I've been a lifelong macrobiotic, which among other things stresses that you eat foods grown locally and in season. I even devoted a chapter in my book, Awake Again, to how I use food to get better. Suppose we grow our own food and we go and or go to the local farmer's market and buy directly from the farmer. Wouldn't that be sufficient to keep a person healthy?
Well, first of all, I completely agree with you, and we're big supporters of local grown food. I think that should be the mainstay of most people's diets. I have my own garden. I grow a lot of my own food. I think everyone with any little piece of dirt on their property should be growing as much food as they can. And if they don't have dirt, they should be growing sprouts in their kitchen, because growing your own food is something that's I think essential to the human experience. Gathering and growing your own food without having to buy it from someone or going through a factory, I think that's key. What I think our foods do for people is that, yes, I think you could be very self-sufficient. You could grow a lot of your own food and you could be very healthy that way. But even if you're eating local organic produce, so you're going to the farmer's market, soils in the United States and in many parts of the world have become deficient in minerals. Iodine is a good case. Years ago, the U.S. government decided that we needed iodine in our diets. Our soils had become deficient in iodine, so their solution was that since everyone was eating salt, they would put iodine in the salt. So that's why we have iodized salt everywhere. But that's just an example of soils becoming deficient in one mineral and it causing a health problem. Mm-hmm. Well, in some of the greatest, the scientific minds have said that almost every disease can be traced to a mineral deficiency of some type. Like, scurvy is scurvy is because you're lacking vitamin C in your diet. Goiters was a problem because of iodine lacking in the diet. Selenium is essential for fighting cancer. So with minerals, there are definitely minerals that people can miss out on that I know can lead to diseases. So what superfoods do, what we've found is that these foods from around the world, every culture, I mentioned the Incans, the Aztecs revered spirulina, the ancient Chinese revered goji berries. You've got all these superfoods in these different cultures, and I definitely think they're worth including in our diets because they're going to deliver that nutrition that you might not necessarily be able to get from an organically grown apple at your local farmer's market.
It sounds to me like as the longtime macrobiotic that I've been, I can still keep that diet, and yet one of the basic tenets of that diet is to eat foods that's indigenous to where I live, and that to go halfway around the world is sounding like that. There's some logic in it because the soils aren't getting me what I need.
It's possible. I look at our foods as an insurance policy. Mm-hmm. I think eating superfoods regularly, including them in your diet, mm-hmm. is probably better than any medical insurance you could subscribe for. And I do the same thing, and I recommend people eat like you do and like we are here. I do the exact same thing. I get local, organically grown orange juice, but then I take that and I put in there, and I put spirulina, or mm-hmm. I blend in maki berry to make sure I'm getting all the antioxidants that I might not be getting from my my normal diet. And remember, you know, we're not living in kind of normal human lifestyles.
No.
You know, the human body, you know, is a really old organism. And, you know, yeah, we've been doing okay in these cities for the last 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
Or are we doing okay? That's another question. But mm-hmm. for hundreds of thousands of years, our genetic archetype, the Homo sapiens, was gathering its own food, living in nature, no buses flying by at 60 miles an hour, no giant cities, no pollution.
Mm-hmm.
So we're an animal living in a very different scenario now.
Mm-hmm.
So we have way more stress mm-hmm. than we've ever had in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And we just talked about how our food sources could be lacking some key nutrition. So I think it's really important that we make sure that we're getting these key nutrients into our bodies and that we're getting foods that help us deal with all the modern stresses like goji berries and like maca.
Hmm. Okay, well, here's the punchline. I'm using it now, not so much to kind of fill in the blanks, although I now know I now see the importance of doing that. But do you market this to athletes?
Yeah, we absolutely do, and I'll need Chris's help with that. He's been working with some of our more recent athlete partners, but. We've been sponsoring a couple just because I'm a surfer. This is kind of my side of it.
Wow.
The athletes I'm interested in helping out is surfers. We've sponsored Zachary Keenan, who's a professional surfer. He's
mm-hmm.
one of these guys who
wow.
surfs giant waves
yeah, yeah.
all over the world.
Okay.
He loves our products. He
yeah.
he gets a monthly dosage of goji berries and maca. He loves our olives.
Mm-hmm.
But maca he's big on because, like you, he's found that to really help. I mean, surfing is an extremely tiring sport.
Uh-huh,
it's
uh-huh.
I liken it to cycling, except with it's all upper body. Paddling through the waves and the
mm-hmm.
water, getting pushed all around, it's
mm-hmm.
it's pretty tough. It takes a lot of stamina, and a lot of surfers are into maca. So
mm-hmm.
Zachary Keenan and
wow.
also Brian Connolly, who's a world-renowned big wave surfer, are a couple guys. But maybe Chris can tell us about some of the other athletes we've sponsored recently.
Wow.
Sure. So one of the athletes that we've sponsored, her name is Brooke Wells, and she's a runner. She was a runner at UC Berkeley, and now she runs for Impala Race Team
mm-hmm.
out of San Francisco. And about, I guess it was like 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, she was qualified for the Olympic trials in Boston, was the youngest qualifier at the time. I think she was 23 or 24, so the youngest qualifier for women's marathon, and had a decent race, you know, placed well for being a young person, her first trial. I think it was about 4 or 5 months ago, we got her on the Sun Food program at one of her coaches, Magda, who actually was an Olympic racer. She raced in the last Olympics
mm-hmm.
in the marathon, had said, you know, Brooke, you're making a lot of gains, but just getting over that last little hump, it's, you know, it just comes down to diet.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were talking with her, and similar to what we did with Zach Keenan, is just, you know, once a month, here's a certain supply of things, and whether it's the phytoplankton, whether it's the MSM that we have, whether it's maca, whether it's just raw food snacks that we send her during the day,
mm-hmm.
Loved it. And so her most recent race that she had, she cut, I believe it was 90 seconds or 120 seconds off of her marathon time.
Uh-huh.
And again, qualified at the A standard for the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
So she's going to be going to the Olympic trials again.
Awesome.
And she still has 2 years left
mm-hmm.
before the actual Olympic trials. So
mm-hmm.
she wrote us some glowing praises and recommendations of, you know, what that's done, whether it allows the body to lean out because
mm-hmm.
you can operate at a higher functionality with it.
Mm-hmm.
You're ridding yourself of a lot of visceral adipose tissue that doesn't do anything for the body.
Mm-hmm.
You're increasing blood flow.
Mm-hmm.
As you're training for Olympics and with all the cycling that you've done, Martin, you can appreciate the recovery time that comes along with it.
That's awesome.
And when you're training at that high a level,
mm-hmm.
that's what you need to do. How hard can I train? How how hard can I recover? And the more you push yourself, the more your body's able to respond to it. And so that's been a fantastic example that we've had as well.
Wow. It's just amazing. I feel like I've discovered, as I said at the beginning, rocket fuel. This is like, I've been riding my bike for years, and I've been crossing the United States twice on a bicycle, and now this Eagle is probably one of the most difficult machines anyone can put themselves on, and probably two, three times as hard as a regular bike. And it's funny, usually when I ride a bike, I'm always thinking about food, thinking about the next place I can stop and get something to eat. Now I ride. And I ride, and it's amazing, man. And I come home. Just for example, I'm in Ireland, as you know, and I rode from I rode from Castlebar to a place called Ballintober Abbey, distance of 13 miles. And I came back, and I had to make that in half an hour because I had a lunch date with my wife. And I didn't realize I was gonna need a half hour to get back. I just took more time getting there than I was taking my time taking pictures. All of a sudden, I'm realizing, oh my God, half an hour to get back, and I've got to make 13 miles. I was 5 minutes late.
That's a good clip.
I was 5 minutes late on a 60-pound
mountain bike. Even without an Eagle.
No, I was on a 60-pound mountain bike. I'm running a 60-pound mountain bike now with no clips, no toe clips, with no extremely heavy and just beat the crap, and it's just working me like a big dog. And this stuff is like, it's amazing. My recovery time is, I'm back up to speed, and I don't even feel like I did anything. It's just amazing, amazing stuff. Okay, let me come back to your stuff. Cacao. We've used the word cacao a lot, and really what that is chocolate in its pure form. Tell me about that, as it the theobromines and the smooth muscle relaxants and stuff like that, as it relates to the athlete.
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, you brought up a good point first off there, clearing up any confusion between cacao and chocolate and cocoa, C-O-C-O-A. It's all the same thing. People took the word, when the Europeans discovered cacao, they took it back to Europe and started calling it cocoa. And they also started messing with it in all kinds of ways. They started roasting the beans and adding milk and sugar and alkaline substances so they could make hot chocolate. Right. And they really turned an amazing health food into... Now, if you go into grocery stores, it's pretty much a junk food because there's so much sugar and milk and all that stuff in there. Cacao is, most people don't know what it really is, and it's the seed of a fruit. So in the jungles of northern South America, Central America, southern Mexico, you'll find the cacao tree, the Theobroma cacao tree, and on it grows a little pod, football-shaped fruit. You open that up, and there's anywhere between 20 and 50 little seeds that are covered by a white, sweet fruit pulp, and those seeds are actually cocoa beans, what became known as cocoa beans. And so that little bean is where all chocolate is coming from. Cacao or chocolate is one of the, it's probably the most chemically complex foods on the planet, known worldwide. I think there are over 1,500 different chemicals in there, and that's why chocolate has never been able to be synthesized in a laboratory. There's no artificial chocolate flavor. Everyone who makes anything chocolatey has to start with chocolate. Now, the good thing for us is that some of those chemicals are neurotransmitters or precursors to neurotransmitters. And it's got, you mentioned theobromine, which is a kind of a sister molecule to caffeine. Now, it's you know, you won't find a labor contract in anywhere in the U.S. that doesn't have a permission in there for all work to stop and everyone to take caffeine. So it's definitely, you know, caffeine is used as a stimulant. The good thing about theobromine is, like you mentioned, theobromine is like caffeine. It can give you an energy boost. It can give you mental clarity. And but it also is a vascular dilator. In fact, theobromine was used to treat heart disease patients before some of the modern, more modern pharmaceutical drugs came on the scene. So it's very good for circulation, theobromine is. It also contains phenylethylamine. It's a natural appetite suppressant. So it's got all these things in there that if you eat a few beans or have a cacao drink, like Cortez said, you can go all day, sometimes with very little food.
Awesome. Well, so what makes your different your cacao? You're different from the chocolate as we know it. I find that I can go a lot longer without feeling hungry. Is cacao the reason? And then if I'm done with the ride, the Sun Food shake I drink seems to relax me. Is that my imagination?
No, I don't think that's your imagination. That's what's going on. All those different chemicals. Cacao is just perfect for human beings, going through strenuous exercises. It also helps alleviate stress, which is what's relaxing you after your big physical workout. So I think the first thing that makes our chocolate different than others is the processing. Mm-hmm. Like I said before, most cacao products, the first thing that a cacao or a chocolate maker does is they roast the beans. Then they press all the oil out of it. They separate the oil and the solids. Then they alkalize the cacao, so they add chemicals to make it more miscible in water. Then they bring everything back together. They bring the fat or the cacao butter or oil back together with the solids. They mix it all together. Then they add lots of sugar and all this stuff. So we don't do any of that. We take the beans. They come out of the pods. They go through a really mild fermentation. Most people aren't aware that chocolate is fermented. So cacao, they take the beans and they put them in these wooden boxes with the fruit pulp on them. And what happens is the beans and that mix gets a little warm, and the sugars come out of the fruit pulp, and they kind of cover the beans up, and a fermentation happens, which starts converting some of the elements in the cacao. When you first open a cacao bean, if you break it open right out of the pod, it'll be purple. But this mild fermentation process turns it brown, and it also gives it that chocolate flavor that we're all familiar with. So it goes through a mild fermentation. Then the beans are completely cleaned of any remaining pulp. They go up to our facility in Quito, Ecuador, which is at a much higher elevation. The cacao is grown in the humid, moist, warm jungle, tropical areas of Ecuador, and then we ship it up to Quito, where that gives us a really cool advantage when it comes to processing it, because it's coming out of a jungle. It's a very moist environment. Doing the processing in Quito at a high elevation where it's very dry allows us to dry and process the cacao at really low temperatures, which, like we said before, preserves nutrients, which is the whole point of what we're doing with cacao. We want those nutrients. We want all those neurotransmitters to be intact. We don't want to roast beans and go through all this processing. So the beans go up to Ecuador, and they're shelled. They go through these really mild, cold milling machines that just kind of break up the beans into little pieces, and then use fans to blow the shell or the skin off the cacao, and that brings you to what are called cacao nibs, and that's what mm-hmm. everyone pretty much starts with. Mm-hmm. A nib is a little piece of the bean that doesn't have any skin on it. That's all a cacao nib is. Mm-hmm. So once you have cacao nibs, you can go from there. You can we crush them up and make a paste out of them, so you just kind of have a chocolate paste. Once you have paste, if you want, you can press the paste and get out the oil on one side and the solids on the other, so you've got cacao butter, where the fat and the oils have come out, and then you take those solids and you grind those up and you have cacao powder. So the process is what really sets our chocolate apart from most chocolates that you'll find out there.
Is anyone, also, anyone else doing this?
There are other people that are doing raw processes, mm-hmm. Low temperature processes. I haven't seen any of those. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly what's going on. They grow it in different regions. I know that there's one that comes out of Bali. But Ecuador, I mean, cacao is indigenous to the Amazon. It mm-hmm. came from Ecuador. When we were there not too long ago, I was blown away by the amount of volcanoes. Mm-hmm. I knew it was a volcanic area, but everywhere you look, there's a volcano. And those volcanic soils, the cacao just loves it, and mm-hmm. it's pulling those minerals.
Yeah.
Those volcanoes are bringing up minerals from mm-hmm. from the liquid hot magma of the earth mm-hmm. right up to the surface. Getting it out there into the environment where these plants can pull minerals up into themselves. I mean, we talked earlier about what you can get from your farmer's market. You know, a tomato can hold, an average tomato can hold 15 or 20 different minerals if they're in the soil. Mm-hmm. If you're growing a tomato and there isn't any selenium or molybdenum in the soil, it's not going to be in the tomato. So mm-hmm. having these cacao grown in Ecuador, where they're native to, where they have an affinity to, where the soils are so rich in minerals. I think that's another thing that really sets ours apart from any other thing out there on the market.
Oh, my God. So it sounds like a lot of the stuff you see, the expensive stuff, like green and black, that's made over here in the United Kingdom, that they don't get anywhere near your process, I don't think. It sounds to me like it's major, hugely, extremely involved to get the kind of good quality cacao that that you're talking about.
Yeah, it's a much different process. Mm-hmm. I'd say 99% of the cacao bar makers, the first thing they do is they get beans. I don't know if their beans are organic. You know, are they being organically grown? Are they mm-hmm. coming from South America? Are they coming from Western Africa? Mm-hmm. Where, I mean, you've got a lot of stuff going on in Western Africa. A lot of commercial heavy pesticide use growing mm-hmm. going on. You've got slave labor issues mm-hmm. going on. Mm-hmm. West Africa. We stay away from West Africa for cacao. Mm-hmm. But that's where the big boys get it.
Yeah.
So they're getting you know. I just from tasting it, I'd say low quality cacao. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the same flavor profile that ours has.
Wow.
Ours is a very unique variety. Uh-huh. Ours is called Arriba Nacional variety. It's an mm-hmm. heirloom variety of cacao. Mm-hmm. It's been, cacao was domesticated thousands of years ago, but there are still some varieties out there that haven't been heavily hybridized, and Arriba Nacional is one of those. It's actually made up of a couple different varieties of cacao kind of mixed in there, but the flavor is very distinct. And Ecuadorian cacao has recently won awards for taste. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so most of these big chocolate companies are just getting beans from West Africa. They're roasting them. That's that first thing that we talked about that we don't do. Mm-hmm. They're roasting the beans. That changes the flavor profile and the nutritive quality of the bean. So, yeah, it's a very different process.
You know, it's funny. I'm sitting here listening to you, Brian, and I'm thinking back to the times where I've stood in the chocolate section at Whole Foods and looked at all the different types of chocolate bars there, and occasionally I'll see different types of signs, one of which I know to be true about the fact that chocolate has the highest antioxidant concentration of any food in the world. But I see a lot of other kinds of things. Maybe they're trying to kind of minimize the guilt factor one can feel for putting such heavily laden sugar food in their body. Things that just seem spurious at best about what chocolate can do. Can you comment on that?
Well, yeah, they're making a lot of claims about cacao. One thing worth noting is, as much as human beings are processing cacao, some of the elements are surviving that process that we described earlier where they're mm-hmm. roasting the beans. There have been some centenarians, people living over 100 years mm-hmm. who when science goes and finds out about their diets, they often find chocolate, but they're not finding milk chocolate with a bunch of sugar candy in there.
Right.
They're finding that these people eat dark chocolate. In fact,
right.
one of them, I recall, this woman who lived well over 100 years said that she was eating baker's chocolate, completely unsweetened chocolate. Mm-hmm. It was one mm-hmm. of her favorite little treats.
Yeah.
So, That's one distinction. Dark chocolate is where people want to go. I'm not saying that there are no health properties to that dark mm-hmm. chocolate that you're seeing in
right.
Whole Foods. And what's gone on over the last few years, certainly since we brought raw cacao on the scene, this was mm-hmm. really interesting to me. Chocolate bar manufacturers started using the word cacao.
Right.
I thought that was really impressive. They went from never mentioning it
right.
to now you go to Whole Foods and you find bars that say 70% cacao, 80%.
Right.
They're not only
right.
using the word cacao, they're telling you how much of the
right.
cacao is in
right.
there.
Well, that's green and
which
black.
Which is really interesting.
That's green and black.
Exactly.
That, big time. And you know what's real funny is green and black, Craig Sams, I think is his exact name, is the owner. And I don't know if you know this or not, but he's a macrobiotic. He used to have macrobiotic restaurants over in the United Kingdom. And at least he's kind of getting a little bit there with an awareness.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly where Green and Black gets their cacao. Mm-hmm. I think I might be confusing them with Shaman chocolate or Dagoba or something, but
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that there are a lot of bars out there that uh-huh. are starting to get them from different regions.
Right.
So Green and Blacks might be getting them from Costa Rica or Ecuador. Mm-hmm. I recall one of those brands gets their cacao from a few different places, and you can really taste the difference between mm-hmm. cacao grown in Trinidad or Dominican Republic versus cacao grown in Hawaii or Costa Rica. There's definitely a flavor difference. That's not that even when you're consuming the same variety, there's a flavor difference where it's grown.
Okay, well, in your shakes that I've become very addicted to, I include things like coconuts and goji berries and maca and things like that. Can you just do like a broad brush, since we're running out of time here, touch on the coconut and the goji berry and the maca, what kinds of things are going to help me as a cyclist?
Sure. And coconut, I mean, that's we could do a whole segment just on coconut. If you're talking about coconut as a whole food, the coconut water, a lot of people probably know, is loaded with electrolytes and is going to blow away any sports drink out there. It's got a ton of potassium, magnesium, calcium, sodium, everything you know that that your body needs to help it stay hydrated. Electrolytes are key for cellular activity, blood pH, nerve and muscle function, everything. But if you're talking about dried coconut or coconut oil, then you want to talk about the fat. And when people talk about eating fats, a lot of them freak out. They don't want to get fat. The difference is that even though coconut is a fat, and it's a saturated fat, which most people will say is bad for you, heart health, all this coconut fat is a medium-chain fatty acid, and it's different than the kind of fats that just kind of, you know, your body gets it, breaks it into lipoproteins, and then starts storing it until your body uses so much energy that it needs to burn the fat. That's not what a medium-chain fatty acid does. A medium-chain fatty acid goes directly to your liver, and it's immediately converted into energy, like a carbohydrate, except it doesn't raise your blood sugar like a carbohydrate. So coconut, dried coconut products, coconut oil is a great energy food. Goji berries, same thing. They are loaded with vitamins and minerals. They're low in sugar, but they've got a long chain polysaccharide, which, like the fat in the coconut oil, is a great long burning fuel source. Gojis also contain 18 amino acids, so they're actually a complete protein. Gojis support the adrenal gland, which will help, you know, maintain your adrenaline levels during exercise. They've also been shown to help increase stamina. But the real key thing about goji berries is they are it's very rare in nature. They have a compound in there called a secretagogue. And the word secretagogue, you know, you see the word secrete in there. What is it secreting? Gojis have been found to help people secrete HGH, which is human growth hormone, and you'll hear a lot about human growth hormone out there on the market. But every other human growth hormone that you're finding as a supplement, they're trying to get things from sometimes other animals. They're trying to synthesize. They're trying to replicate human growth hormone in your body, but goji berries can help your own body stimulate it on its own. And human growth hormone is key for repairing and maintaining the body. It's that internal fountain of youth, and it's really what makes goji berries so famous for longevity. Some of the longest living people on record have been known to eat goji berries.
Okay, give me one, if it's possible, give me 40 seconds on maca.
Sure, maca. So maca, we mentioned earlier that it was revered by the Incans, and even the pre-Incan cultures revered maca. And maca was used, it's pretty well known now, that the Incan warriors would use it before battle because it would help them with strength and stamina. I think what really makes maca go is it's got tons of amino acids. I think 15 or more amino acids, which, you know, make up protein and assist the body in metabolism. And amino acids are really essential for lots of different cellular activity. Maca is also adaptogenic, and you see, I love dissecting words. Adaptogenic. It's helping people adapt to whatever's going on in their environment. Adaptogens they're really interesting. If you give an adaptogenic food or herb to someone with high blood pressure, it can help lower it. If you give that same adaptogenic herb to someone with low blood pressure, it can help raise it. So it regulates the body's systems. That's what it does. It equalizes, regulates hormones, supports the adrenal gland. And one of the key things about maca is that it grows at a really high altitude, mm-hmm. and it just happens to be a great food for, you know, working and living in these high altitude, low oxygen environments. It's pretty interesting that way up there at 14,000 feet in the Peruvian Andes, mm-hmm. there's a root vegetable growing there mm-hmm. that's great for living and working at 14,000 feet in the Andes.
Mm-hmm.
So wow. imagine taking the food that the Incans would use to help them in battles, at high altitudes, what happens to you if you eat that same food on your cycling trip across across Ireland?
It's
got to be beneficial.
Right. Or even across America where it's warmer in the summer at least. I want to finish with Sun is Shining, a drink that is a big joy for me. I love this stuff. Without question, it's better than any of the other tons of drinks that are marketed to cyclists. You know, from
thank you.
I mean, this stuff's amazing. It's totally amazing. It almost feels like nourishment, and I know it speaks to the problems I was having with electrolyte depletion. Can you speak to this for me, for my listeners?
Sure.
I should say.
Yeah, you bet. So Sun is Shining is a green superfood formula that we came up with years ago. It's gone through a couple different improvements where we really liked the formula, but we said let's upgrade it a little bit. So Sun is Shining is, like I said, it's a green superfood, and it contains a whole list of wildcrafted and organic herbs, green foods. It contains parsley, kale, spinach, kelp, alfalfa, lots of green land vegetables that are just loaded with chlorophyll. You know chlorophyll's relationship to your bloodstream. It also contains horsetail, which is a great source of silica, which is essential for it's good for bone health, fingernails, hair. But what we did was we took all those ingredients and made sure they're organic or even beyond organic, and we micro-pulverized them. So we've got these, and when I say we've got kale, we actually take kale juice remove the water at a low temperature process, leaving just the chlorophyll, the green, the minerals and vitamins, and then we take after we do the dehydration, we take those. That material, and we micro pulverize it, so we expose more surface area, and that helps with assimilation and absorption. But we're not done there. We also add enzymes and probiotics and the probiotics assist even further in the assimilation of the nutrients that are in there. So we've got this nutrient-rich cocktail, and then we take these extra steps to make sure that, yeah, you've got all these great vitamins and minerals in there. Let's make sure they get into the body, they get into the bloodstream, they get into the cell, and all these items can do their job.
Fascinating. So you've gone from a book company to a company that, what are you, when you're sitting there thumbing through a magazine or watching TV and you see some of these energy drinks for athletes come over the transom, what are you thinking in your mind?
Well, I'm an ingredient reader. It's something
right.
I picked up. I've been a vegan for 13 years, and mm-hmm. one of the first things I had to do when I started to be a plant eater primarily mm-hmm. was I started having to read ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I was looking for things like whey and gelatin, things that I didn't want to eat anymore. And when I started reading ingredients, I started noticing, even on foods that were vegan, a mm-hmm. lot of ingredients that, A, I didn't know what they were, which made me nervous, and B, mm-hmm. I would see things that I outright knew weren't good for me.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm looking through magazines, when I see these energy drinks in their mm-hmm. little mm-hmm. colorful containers, I pick them up and glance at the ingredients, and you see the first ingredient, sugar high fructose corn syrup.
Many
things on those labels that are associated with poor health, and
right.
I just steer clear from them. And how do I deal with that? Well, it makes me come here to Sun Food and work even harder to get my message out there about natural food.
Wow. Okay, so now I'm going to be honest. The maca and the cacao, as both of us know, are not very tasty foods. In fact, they're almost impossible to get down by themselves. And yet, when I mix them into a shake after a training ride or something like that, it's just extremely delicious. Can you possibly enlighten my listeners to how you go about achieving such a feat?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, a lot of these foods are considered ingredient foods, meaning you want to take them and then do something else with them. Mm-hmm. And the Aztecs did the same thing. They would eat whole cacao beans, but they made famous their drinks. They would take the cacao beans, they would crush them up using a molinillo, and they would add hot water, and they would actually add chili pepper and some other herbs to it.
Yeah.
They wouldn't do hot chocolate like we have today, uh-huh. but they would make a spicy chocolate drink and uh-huh. take it that way. So, it really depends on personal taste, and that's kind of the freedom that you get when you make your own food like this.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Instead of going down to a smoothie store or the restaurant and then, uh-huh. Wondering what they're putting in it or having to ask them what they put in it, you make your own. So if mm-hmm. if you want almond milk, or if you're into rice milk or goat's milk, whatever milk you're into, mm-hmm. start with something that's going to give it that milky flavor. A lot of people are looking for some creaminess in a smoothie.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to use raw organic almond milk that I make myself.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my favorite chocolate smoothies or shakes is I take a little bit of almond milk. I add in a handful of cacao nibs. I'll throw maybe a date or two in there to sweeten it up, and blend that up with maybe some coconut meat or some coconut water. And there's just endless possibilities. But the thing is that you get to sweeten it however you want,
mm-hmm.
and that's one of the key things is so many people are dealing with blood sugar sensitivity issues. So that way someone can choose their own sweetener. I'd like to choose dates. Somebody else might want to use something that's more diabetic friendly, like a Yacon syrup or something like that. That they can really agree with. But there are endless ways to use these foods. There are lots of recipes online, mm-hmm. sunfood.com. We've got a whole recipe section there you can check out.
Mm-hmm.
It's endless. And then you mentioned the sun is shining and your affinity
mm-hmm.
to that.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite things to do is I think about 8 ounces of organic orange juice, fresh squeezed, and just put in a big heaping teaspoon or even a tablespoon of Sun is Shining and blend mm-hmm. it up. And most people, you see a big green smoothie and they kind of back away. But the barley and the malt in the barley grass juice,
uh-huh,
it gives
uh-huh.
it this malty texture
wow.
to the orange juice that I really
wow.
love. That's one of my favorite. I call
uh-huh.
it Aztec OJ because of the spirulina in there.
Okay.
And I blend up orange juice and Sun is Shining. Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
Awesome. Wow. Brian, you're brilliant. You too, Chris. I feel blessed to have had this opportunity to kind of get, I've nowhere near picked your brain. And just FYI for my listeners, if you do call Sun Food, you do make the occasion to give them a call. You guys run like if someone were to sit on hold, they'd get some of this information in that modality. Are you one of the speakers, Brian? Are you one of the guys that I hear speaking?
No, I've been meaning to record some information for our answering machine that you're hearing.
Mm-hmm.
But right now what we've got running on there, what you probably heard, is Bruce Fife.
Okay.
He's the author of The Coconut Oil Miracle and Coconut Cures. He's one of our favorites to listen to. He goes on and on about
right.
the miracles of coconut.
Right.
So he's the guy playing on there right now. But
right.
We switch it up from time to time.
Okay. Well, listen, you guys, I guess that's what we've got to keep this in the interest of brevity and the interest of the attention of the listening public. We've got to cut it at about this threshold limit. Chris, is there anything you'd like to add?
How can I follow up Brian?
No,
everything's been great. Like I'm similar to you, Martin, that I do. I ride my bike a lot. I've got one with gears and everything on
uh-huh.
it. I
what
do triathlons and long distance
wow.
races and everything.
Yeah.
And same thing of why I love working with a bunch of athletes and even, the greatest sporting event of ourselves as people is life. You know, on a daily basis, you're getting up there and you're competing, whether it's work, whether it's
right.
kids, it's family,
right.
it's just everything.
Wow.
This is one of the things, the power of raw food and the power of a superfood. Why are people depressed? Why are people getting diabetes? Why are people getting all these things? They're eating the wrong things. 500 years ago, 300 years ago, no one had anxiety attacks.
Mm-hmm.
No one had lethargy. No one got diabetes. It's all from eating just a lot of processed food, and that's one of the things we're trying to do is alleviate that for people.
All right. Well, listen, you guys, awesome. I feel so blessed that you guys are part of my ride and part of what's going forward, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks so
you
much
bet.
For having us on, Martin.
Right.
And great. Good luck. We wish you luck on your rides, and we love supporting you.
All right, you guys. Thank you, man. You're the best. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, okay. Martin. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
That wraps up another edition of the National Bicycle Greenways Mountain Movers podcast series. We hope you enjoyed it. This has been NBG director and Awake Again author Martin Krieg. To access this podcast in the future and to hear other shakers and movers that we've interviewed, go to bikeroute.com.